The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
Welcome to the One Fall Podcast. We've got a busy weekend ahead. We've got more wrestling than we know what to do with. There's tons of shows. There's tons of shows going on in Toronto right now. But I think we should start it all off before we get to all the fun stuff is talking about Harley Race and the impact he's had in professional wrestling. And who better to talk about Harley Race than someone that has a lot of knowledge in professional wrestling, and that's Mo. How you doing, Mo?
There's probably a lot of people better to talk Harley Race. In fact, I know there is. But we can't not mention the passing of a true legend like Harley. And I'm good. Joel, how about yourself?
I'm here. There's been a lot of wrestling news. I know that the podcasts have been fewer and far between, but this weekend was really busy, and it's good to be in the thick of things of wrestling again, because it's kind of slowed down in the summer, and now I feel like it's really ramping up to what will be a busy fall and winter time for pro wrestling.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, even ROH is having a fairly big show even right now as we record. You know, this weekend is as packed for wrestling as any event outside of WrestleMania that I can think of.
Yeah, this is a good time, especially if you were in the Toronto area. The amount of wrestling. I know Oriental Wrestling Entertainment was running a show in Toronto. As you mentioned, Ring of Honor, who has been in the news for all the wrong reasons with really, really rough ticket sales recently. New Japan's done really well in ticket sales, and Ring of Honor has struggled a bit. So it'll be interesting to see where we are a year's time from now. But this is a good time to be wrestling. And I mean, we're going to talk about Harley in a second, but to mention that Billy Corgan had announced that the NWA will be returning to television. How it'll return to television, as in will it be on TV or will it be streaming, remains to be unseen, but we're going to get weekly studio wrestling again, which I absolutely am a fan of. I've always been a fan of that look of the studio wrestling, and I mean, if they can Corgan seems to be a very smart man, is slowly building up the NWA, not rushing into anything, taking little steps here and there. And I think this was the next right step for him. I'm interested to see what his roster looks like, but I think they're going to take it very slowly with this. There's going to be no rush. And doing studio wrestling means that you don't have to sell an arena out quite yet.
Well, and studio wrestling is going to be interesting to see what the look is like in modern day. But in a lot of ways, I mean, I personally just look at NXT or even TNA, what they were, you know, as a modern look of studio wrestling in many ways. So, I mean, but yeah, this will be even more so. I mean, if you're not understanding what we mean with studio wrestling, just go back and look at some of the old, you know, WCW Saturday Night, that type of thing. Go back a good angle to watch to explain studio wrestling for people would be go back and look at the NWA, the early 80s. There was an angle, I think about 1980, probably about 83, I think, or maybe 84. It's Flair and Piper, and that's a really entertaining one, a good way for people to get a look at it. But and talking about that older stuff, and I could easily talk about ROH and their ticket sales, but we want to hit that Harley, right? Because yeah. I mean, I remember he passed away. You said to me, what should I watch about him? And it was a difficult question, because Harley was great. Harley's an all-time legend, but it's such a different style. Everything about it, not just the matches, the promos, and just everything about it. He kind of epitomizes, probably more than I think any other wrestler in history, the best of the 70s, as far as as what pro wrestling used to be back in that era. A traveling champion and matches that were very much psychology based, that were slower paced, built slowly but finished strong, promos that were felt very real, but didn't have necessarily a lot of color towards them, but a real talk to them. I recommend it. I thought a Flair to a Gold, or for the Gold, the Flair and Harley feud from the 1983 Starrcade that kicked off the pay-per-view era, closed circuit era, really, in wrestling. I thought that would be the best thing to kind of to translate and show kind of the best of it, because it was a storyline where Flair had been the champion once before but had lost it, and then Harley comes in and puts a bounty out on him, and you can see Harley's influence in remember a few years ago, Triple H, when he had the mutton chops and he had he did a angle, I think it was Goldberg, where it was $100,000 for somebody to take him out. And it was right out of this, where it was, I think, $25,000 that Harley offered somebody to take out Flair, and it was Bob Orton Jr. and was it Trevor or Bob Murdoch or Murdoch? I think it was Murdoch and Bob Orton Jr. and not Trevor Murdoch. That was the other one. What was his name? Murdoch. Did you get a chance to watch the angle?
I didn't get a chance to watch the angle because I couldn't track it down via online.
It wasn't readily on the WWE Network. No, it's Murdoch and Orton. They take out Flair, and then Flair says he's going to retire, and then instead he comes back with and just beats the hell out of all of them. And I'm never going to retire, and says he'll beat Harley if he can't, or he'll retire though if he can't beat Harley in the cage, and that's what sets up the match. And they held off on the match for a long time, and Harley was just really good and just such a good heel, but these promos, and so it's not so much the match that's good. Kaniski was the referee in this steel cage match, but it's setting up the emotion, it's like when we talk about when Johnny Gargano finally won that belt, like it was just that emotional release that they built up forever. And that's what they did so properly with this feud, and Harley was so important in it. But also, like I say, you see the influence, the bumps. He was a great bump taker for the baby faces when he needed to. When he was probably his nationwide best, visibility as the King Harley Race. Unfortunately, he was already past his prime. He was in his mid 40s by that point, and that was not the best of Harley, but the greatest knee drop in the history of the business, yeah, without any question. And you want to go back and see the influence on it. The knee drop that you'll see Triple H use is directly 100% Harley's knee drop, just not quite as good. In a lot of ways, work-wise, I think Triple H probably is the closest thing that, because his matches kind of tend to be a little more slow-paced and build. Yeah. I think probably is the closest modern-day analogy. But Harley also was, quite the character behind the scenes. You talk about a guy who would fight, drink, and smoke. He did all these things to excess, often while driving, from show to show. Legendary tough guy. I mean, he got the belt the first time because it was it was Dory Funk Jr. and they wanted to put somebody in the ring. Dory Funk Jr. there was worries that he wouldn't drop the belt, and wanted to put somebody in the ring that he wasn't going to mess with, both that he respected and also could force him to do the job if needed be. And that was Race. He was literally a legit street fighter, tough guy, and a fascinating character, well known for his barbecues that bring all the people together every time WWE came to town, and come down and they bring the entire roster in and do barbecues and a great story of Owen Hart, without knowing it, putting a hot sauce all over some of the chicken and ruining it one time, a rib on everybody. And of course, Harley got him back with a stun gun in the back at a show later, giving quite a shock to Owen. He was really close with Stu Hart.
Yeah.
Stu Hart and Harley were very tight. So, absolutely. Legendary guy. Like I say, there are many people who can give you better on me, but you just look up the stories. In a lot of ways, more than the matches, I think people hear the behind-the-scenes stories from him. They'll just be fascinated by it, and a lot of them are just hilarious and just, yeah. But this is a guy, 100 miles an hour, literally town to town, drinking a six pack. That was how he got around out town every night, and certainly we don't recommend that. But it was a different era.
It was absolutely a different era. But the match that I saw, Harley and Flair, the one thing that I kept thinking through that whole match was, man, this is the type of guy they need to have put up against Seth. It's just because you just see how much he beats the ever-loving hell out of Flair, and you get to that point where you want Flair to have that comeback, and Flair ultimately gets that win and has that moment and then has the promo in the back. But you just see that what Harley was able to do in the ring, and you're like, man, I feel like this is something a guy like Seth is missing. Just getting the ever-loving hell beat out of him. Not the Brock Lesnar style. I mean, actually in a match, just beating the tar out of him and then building towards that comeback. It's someone, like, when you watch it, it's definitely a very slow pace. You can definitely see that he's inspired guys like Triple H and Cody. You can definitely see the NWA influencing Cody matches. Honestly, if you could take rewind the clock a little bit for Hunter, maybe take it back 5-10 years, put him against the current version of Cody, I think you'd get the closest to an NWA match in that time period, in those times, in the current time. You always heard the stories about Harley. You never, anytime you read stuff or read about the back in the day or guys going to those barbecues, you'd hear stories about Harley. And one of the stories that always stuck out to me was, when he had one of those barbecues and, Punk had done a shot. And he's straight edge. He did a shot because of his respect for Harley. And it just speaks to the influence that Harley had on everyone. And just, it didn't matter what.
Absolutely. He had that massive respect. He had that respect. And he also trained a lot of guys too.
And
still ran a territory. He's one of the guys who was able to run a, you know, kind of a small territory, not a mildly successful, but you know, it was still out there, you know, and not, you know, Vince didn't try and shut it down. Like, it was a small territory, but I mean, Vince will even shut down small territories often if he can, but not Harley. So, I mean, he was, you know, I think that's a good way to, I like that with Cody. I think that's a really good point there. For sure. There's a great story with him, and it's something to do with a beach house and a party. And I can't even remember the details, but you talk about it's what Seth needs. They've said that before. I've heard it said what wrestling needs right now is it's Johnny Valentine, Greg Valentine's father, you would believe it's real. It's like New Japan has that. They have that in Ishii. You know, you're like, okay, but maybe not all the matches are real, but Ishii's is real. Like, you know, like you just believe that. And that's what Race had as well. And that is what's missing and what a guy like Seth could really use. Absolutely. Just that feeling that, okay, it's time to put away all the BS. This is real now.
Yeah. You take a little trip down a rabbit hole of watching some of this old stuff. And I love watching, like I said, I love the studio look, and I love going back and watching some of this old stuff. Some of it's just downright terrible. Like, much like the stuff today is, there's stuff that's just downright terrible. There was bad stuff back then. But you get those little glimmers and those little moments with a Piper or a Harley Race, and you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. And you just think about just, man, if you could find a way to bring something like that into this current product, I feel like that would be beneficial. Like, one of the tributes that I saw to Harley was from Tommaso Ciampa, who I thought was one of the best bad guys going in wrestling for quite a while there, until he it slowed down a little bit. But then you look at just Ciampa's story right now with the returning from the neck injury and it's still being probably back next spring or summer, Meltzer had reported. And you just imagine, for me, I'm just imagining that reaction that he'll get. Because no matter, it'll be interesting to see where NXT is when he comes back. But if it's similar to what it is now, he's going to get a big reaction when he comes back. And that to me is something that, oh, I'm excited for that. That's something that I want to see and I want to hear and I want to be a part of. And there's very little in pro wrestling. Well, I wouldn't say very little. There's not a whole lot that gets you excited and gets you revved up for things. And I think you just see, like, Lance Storm had just announced that he's closing down his wrestling school. Like, September will be his last session that he'll be training wrestlers. And then you look at Harley Race, who had trained a bunch of people, and you just look at just the, like you said, the influence that he's had. I think this is a guy that many people won't know about the matches, but I think that doesn't matter, because you're going to see his influence on the product through guys that he either trained him or has passed knowledge along to, that has influenced their careers and has given us some decent things in professional wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. He influenced guys like Dynamite Kid, who influenced guys like Bret Hart, who influenced guys like Shawn Michaels, who influenced guys like Seth Rollins, you know? Like, it's a it's part of a wheel almost, you know. Yeah. It goes around in a circle.
Absolutely. And man, seeing the diving headbutt and the way he did it, I was like, oh no, if only you knew, Harley. That was...
Well, but you know, for him at least, late 70s, I think he was 70, what was he, 77? Something like that?
Yeah, he...
I think with his passing, so... He had a good run.
Yeah. And, like, I don't know, because I've only seen the one match. Did he do the diving headbutt off the top rope, or was it always... a little bit lower, because I saw him do a stand.
It was a little bit lower, yeah.
And you see where he was. I mean, you talk about the lifestyle, and especially wrestling in the 70s. You saw later on pictures of him in a wheelchair, but it was still one of those... it impacted his life, was the diving headbutt. But he did live a full life, and I mean, that Owen story is one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, that just kind of, I think it sums up both guys, you know, it sums up to both guys so well. Absolutely. All right. So where do you want to go from here?
That we can get to. You mentioned the MVP of the G1, Ishii, and I think that's where we go next. Is we're approaching on the last two nights of the best thing in pro wrestling. This is absolutely the best thing in pro wrestling.
I think it's the best thing in sports. I think it's absolutely the best thing in all of sports.
I love it. That Ishii and Shingo Takai match was just amazing. Just, when I finished that match, I just wanted to sit down and talk to someone about that match, because it just was everything that you wanted from that match, especially from both guys. This G1 has been able to elevate some guys to a nice level, and I think, you know, Shingo is a junior heavyweight, but I don't think he's going to be there for long. I think it would be a mistake to keep him in the junior heavyweight division. I think he's a guy that they can absolutely move up to the heavyweight division, because he is just... he's blown me away in this tournament. His match with Naito, his match with Moxley, and his match with Ishii. I'm just a big fan. And I'm on board. Ishii should have... I feel like Ishii should have a heavyweight title run at some point. I know he's older, but damn it, I want it.
I know. I've kind of taken my... You know, I don't think it'll ever happen. It's kind of it's so weird. It's like you try and judge a guy like him and his, like, he's 43, if I remember correctly. He's so brilliant and just so consistent. And it's so weird. It's not, he doesn't do occasionally you might see a high spot, but not a lot.
No.
It's timing. That's the thing that he does better than anybody else is this. He has this timing of, he knows just when to not sell a move to get a reaction from the crowd, you know, like to fire up when just to fire up and not sell, or when to sell like mad, or when to, instead of doing the move that you're expecting, do something else, like just suddenly that catches you off guard and you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Like he's so brilliant. I kind of think it's funny you talk about him as MVP, and like my two favorite matches in the tournament are both Ospreay matches.
Yeah.
And that's the match with Evil and the match with Okada.
Yeah.
I love both those matches, but Ishii is still, like, it's just that consistency. There's no question that he's just, and what would Block B be without him? Like, Block A would still be great.
Oh, yeah.
Block B without Ishii, I don't know what it would be. It would not have the same thing. And it is great. Like, you know, again, you could be in a tournament like this. You can only have 8 points and still somehow be elevated. It's, you know, even though you don't have a winning record or, you know, 6 points or whatever, you know, or 4 points, like Archer, who's being elevated despite, you know, not having many points. Like it's the presentation. So great. Such a great tournament. So brilliantly booked. I just can't, you know, I mean, Gato, I mean, certainly, maybe he's not the best guy in the world. Certainly is. And if you listen to Harry Smith, or AKA Data Boy Smith Jr., but as a booker, nobody's more brilliant. Like, just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, I decided to challenge myself one of my days off, and I was like, I'm going to take 20 guys from WWE, I'm going to make a Block A and a Block B, and I'm going to run through all 18 days, and I'm going to pretend book my own WWE G1, and I had to restart it twice because I screwed up. And I had to go back and rejig a whole bunch of things. I finally got to it, and I finally got all 18 days, but it's so incredibly hard. And even looking at each day, I'm like, it's okay. I could go back and easily improve this, and I probably will. There's certain days where certain things aren't hitting. Like, there aren't quality matches, but it just seems like each night for the G1, there's always at least something that you can be like, oh, this matters because this will impact where these guys go. And it's
I don't think the WWE can give you the in-ring quality over the course of the tournament that these guys are giving you. I just don't think they could. That's an interesting, I've never thought of doing that. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. What I have thought to myself, and we still haven't gotten around to it because busy, but, is, you know, we talk about a way to book WWE and present it differently and everything like that, and doing a show around that. I have thought to myself before, not a G1, but I mean, TNA sort of did this, but something similar. I thought that they should have some sort of league event, with the chance to, with some established guys, a chance to some new guys and some guys that can surprise, and have it much longer, and just have it over like 3 months, and have the events be at house shows, and then show like the finishes from the house shows at on TV, and this happened, and make it not just be straight matches, like make it be these are tag matches, and mix it in, and this is some sort of gimmick matches, so you find the best guy in quotation marks, the best, you know, best all around performer in all these different disciplines, and hold it over 3 or 4 months, and like I say, have the full things. Maybe you show the results, and you show a clip or two, like the last 30 seconds or 20 seconds of a match at a house show. But I thought it would be a way to get attendance up for the house show. I know Vince McMahon knows how to solve it, but and I'm sure eventually he'll get to it. But one of the problems with the house shows is it's kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters now. You've seen it once, you've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
You're like, it's fun, but there's nothing important happening at these. And it would be a way to make something important happen at WWE house shows. You know, because people know that nothing is important there. Titles don't change hands at house shows. So we know this. So like it things like that hurt it. And I always thought that this would be a way to, you know, try and give that a shot in the arm along with making for some great television and pay-per-views and a way to expose different guys every week in matches that mean something. Anyways, I've gone off on a tangent here, but that's my damned idea.
That's not a bad idea at all. But shifting back to the G1, the last two nights, Block A really only comes down to one match, and that is the final match, the ninth match, the 30-minute time limit draw. It is the no longer a flight risk Kota Ibushi versus the best damn final 10 minutes in any match I've seen, Kazuchika Okada. This is big, because, I mean, I don't know who's winning this. I have no idea.
I think what's big about it, and I think it's if they, I mean, I still think, okay, it's the booking, right? Gato's had me so many times in this tournament mixed up, going, oh, I know where he's going now, and then that's not where it was. Like, there was a point where I literally thought to myself, okay, Moxley's not around so long, so how do you maximize him? Let him go over everybody and then put him undefeated against Okada undefeated, make it the biggest undefeated match in G1 history. You know, two undefeated guys meeting, Okada goes over, makes the legend of Okada even bigger. I thought that's where they were going for a while. Like, there's so many ways. And I still look at Okada winning and think, well, if he wins, he can pick two different opponents for two different nights at the Tokyo Dome. And that makes sense, but it could be Ishii. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to make it Ishii. I mean, and you could go if Ishii, or not Ishii, sorry, Ibushi. It could be Ibushi. Yeah, if Ibushi wins and then loses to Jay White, then both get a match at you know, the Tokyo Dome. Like, there's so many different ways they can go with it. It's brilliant freaking booking.
Yeah.
Go figure.
And it's crazy how I'm excited to watch this, and I'm going to get to see both these matches live through the New Japan World. But it's tough because I've had a string of luck right now in our one fall pick'em point total. I'm in the lead via 3 points. I'm at 51, Josh is at 49, and Mo's at 48. But if Jay White gets in, then I'm screwed, because I figure if you can get both of the finals right, then that should be the tiebreaker. That logically makes the most sense. I won't contest too much on that. But it easily could be Okada, and it could be Okada and Naito. It could be...
It could be.
Yano could break in. I think he has 8 points right now, Yano. So, for all we know, they could be royally screwing with us, and he could be somehow in the mix here. He still is.
Yeah, he's in the mix. It's such a weird, again, that block will, like, that whole night, it's like there'll be a domino effect.
Yeah.
Like, if Moxley loses the juice, then, you know, he's no longer in contention, and how many of these balls will they keep in the air for the final match, or will, by the time it gets to the final match, will it just be the two of them?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely, Ishii losing the other night was a surprise. I thought he would have enter it with a chance to win in the final night. Now he's out, just based on tiebreakers and these different things. But, oh yeah, when you talk about booking it, you talk about factoring in the tiebreakers and keeping everybody alive and the way to do that, and then understanding the tiebreakers, and like, that's where it gets really confusing. That's where the booking gets even more genius.
it's downright impressive. Just before I get to Block B, Will Ospreay is taking on Tanahashi. I've been saying it since the beginning. I think that if there's any victory that Will's going to get, it would be over Tanahashi. But he beat Kenta, so I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen with that. But I feel like that's a match that could be you could look to and be like, hey, this was a moment that Will took another step forward by, in storyline standpoint, beating Tanahashi. Or Tanahashi could easily get the win. It's really...
Absolutely.
It's
because they already did that storyline with Ibushi and Tanahashi, right? Yeah. So do you want to do it twice with Tanahashi in one tournament?
See, and that's
the thing. You know, like that's the biggest, to me, it's not the best match, but it's the best moment of the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, the post match between Ibushi and Tanahashi, where where Tanahashi is just whispering to him, and it's like, again, it made it feel so real, and it's also it's where, and so many of these matches like that, and the Sonata of Okada match, and these different matches, it's like if you watch that match in a bubble, you'd be like, that's a great match. But if you watch it over the course of years, all these stories and this year's tournament building on last year's and all this and that, it all means even more. Like it becomes beyond just a great match. That's what's so amazing about the way this is presented.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And looking at Block B, we're gonna get the next step in the Moxley and Robinson story. Shingo's taking on Goto, and Goto's still very much alive. And the final match, Naito and Jay White. That's Moxley, Naito, and Jay White are all three of our respective picks for Block B. We knew that the final night is going to be massively important for who wins our little pick'em, but it's also going to be who I think Block. Well,
let's first off, let's face it. Our little pick'em. You call it our little pick'em, but it's not a little pick'em. It's probably even more important than the G1 itself.
Yeah, this is true.
This is a very big thing.
This will decide. Josh was in the lead for quite a while.
Yeah.
And he hadn't watched nearly as much. And then as time went on, I think what happened with that was we started to see more of kind of the storylines. And I've seen every G1 match.
Well, he's still ahead of me, so you can't say this. I've seen everything too, but like I say, Kenta, Kenta and Ospreay. Like I picked Kenta because I'm sitting there going, well, Kenta's a junior. It's the perfect Ospreay can beat Tanahashi. And then you let Kenta go over, and then you have this Kenta versus Ospreay match for the Tokyo Dome. But now Ospreay wins, and it's like, well, I don't see the logic behind that. But it's Gato, so you just trust it that there is a logic behind it.
Well,
and these type of things though, where it's like he just has me questioning what I think he's going to do so much. And but again, that also makes it feel more real. Makes it feel more like a sport.
Well, my thing is like one of the examples is Josh had picked Moxley to go over Goto, and I think both of us had kind of had an inclination that they were building Goto up to beat Moxley, so that Moxley still didn't have that extra run. So I think it benefited for watching in some respects, and then there are other respects where you just have no freaking clue what's going on. And we both have to make our picks. I believe Josh has already sent in his picks, but both of us have to make our picks for the final two nights. And I'm just looking at it, and I'm like, I don't know what to pick. I honestly, and with the point spread, say hypothetically I get one or two more points on you, I have a 3-point lead on you, even if Jay wins, I may still have enough of a cushion to...
I know. It's a big... You don't want to get these wrong.
Yeah.
Like I was so, these last two nights, I was so confident in every single pick, which is why when Fale beat Tanahashi, when Ospreay won, when Ishii lost, like I was just, you know, Yano winning, like all these matches, I'm just going, I got no clue. And it's like, you know, this is the thing I do have in football. I do very well in fantasy football, NFL fantasy football. I typically go to the playoffs, often to the finals, and win many leagues. I my win percentage is about 15%. So considering, of winning the championship. So that's above the, your chances of winning are something like 7%. So my chances are slightly above, my history is slightly above that. But then you'd have another thing called one of these elimination pools, where you pick a winner or pick the loser or whatever. And I'm often out by like week five because it's real sports and anything can happen. Yeah. And you make your best guess and you can be completely wrong. Like there's no safe picks in the world of sport, and there's no safe picks in the world of the G1.
No. My proudest moment was when I picked Sonata to beat Okada and when I picked Yano to beat Moxley. Because at that point, I think I was floating around the bottom. And those two picks and a few others really propelled me ahead of everyone in our
well, pick-up. I had Sonata winning as well.
Did you? I had it listed as...
Or maybe I didn't. You know what? That might have been still where I was thinking. Now they're going to go with the undefeated one. I thought I had Sonata winning.
Well, let's take a look, because with the magic of social media, I can. Oh yeah, you did.
Yeah, I thought
you did.
I did, yeah. Did you get that wrong? Does that give me an extra point?
I think that gives you an extra point.
Ooh, so I move into a tie with. Ooh, ha ha. Interesting. Yeah, no, I had Sonata winning too. At that point, it was like it was the only thing that made sense because they had broken. Because at that point, with Moxley losing when he lost to Yano, and I did not have that one.
Yeah.
When he lost, because at that point I was thinking, okay, so yeah, like I say, they're going with two undefeated guys meeting for the first time to really put Okada over as the greatest of all time when he wins it. And then as soon as Moxley lost, I thought, well, makes no sense for Okada to go undefeated anymore. Who storyline wise was the guy who should beat him, and it was like Sonata never beats him. It's the perfect storyline.
Yeah,
you know Sonata, you know, with a poor start to the tournament, and yet he doesn't come out of this thing in bad shape at all. Like it's just again, it's just so good.
One of the things, because there were a few other things I want to talk on. First one was just Naito and his run that he's had. Do you think that the peak of Naito he's already hit his peak and now we're seeing kind of a decline because of health, or do you think he's still got?
I don't think that's the case. He runs an incredibly important faction. He's still been in a couple of main event slots. I think he's been in three in that block currently, and I think he's going to be in a fourth. So I mean, you know, that's almost half of that block's nights he's in the main event. So I don't think so. I just think it's just somebody else's turn right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think so. I think he's what, 37 or 38?
He's 37.
So yeah. 37. So yeah, he's got time left. I know health wise, but he's always been beat up. And I mean, health wise, how many of these guys have been? And that's another thing about Ishii where you go, like, how the hell is this guy 43? Never looks different. Never seems to get hurt. You feel like he could wrestle to 60 and it wouldn't affect him with his style. It's just, but yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I think Naito is going to be just fine down the road. It's just part of a long term. The fact that he hasn't won that Tokyo Dome main event just means when it eventually happens in a couple of years, the crowd will want it that much more.
Yeah, because the crowd's fully behind. I really like from when he was facing Omega back to back years in G1 finals. I was like, holy crap, this guy's incredible. And then you just start to follow him and see more and more of his matches. Like, holy crap, this guy's amazing. And you just hope that he eventually gets that moment in the Tokyo Dome, because it was taken away by the fans that one year. Yeah. So this is a guy that hasn't had that moment, really. He lost to Okada at Wrestle Kingdom 12, I believe. I think it was 12.
That in the best built-up main event where you felt both guys, it was their time. So both guys, you kept on back and forth. Who the hell is going to win? It was so great. You know, something WWE often telegraphs the winner of their matches. Like you knew, for instance, Becky was going over at WrestleMania main event. You know,
yeah.
Like you just knew it. That was the storyline. It's the right storyline. But they don't build it so, God, it could be this one, it could be that one. Like, you just never really have that same, you know Roman Reigns is going to go over, and then maybe he doesn't, but over Brock Lesnar. But he does over Triple H, he does over The Undertaker. And you just know it, right? Like they don't build it in the same way where, you know, like the way that this is, where you could make an argument for both guys. And so the accomplishment doesn't feel the same for people, you know, and which is a shame. I think the thing about him is and we talk about his health, like I say, a guy like Naito is really, really smart. And he can change his style to adapt.
Yeah.
Like Tanahashi has changed his style over the last few years to adapt and still have great matches. I think Naito is firmly capable of doing that, of changing his style to adapt and still have great matches. And he's such a unique character and so incredibly over. Like when he won the other night, you know, and he gives his speech and you know, over Shoto, and then you know, he gives his little speech, and the referee comes to the ring, gives him his IC belt, and he turns and he spits on the ref. And you're like, dude, that's just such a dick move. You're like, you're just such a dick. And then on his way out, he stops, and there's somebody with like their 2-year-old kid, and he puts down his fist and fist bumps the 2-year-old and smiles, and you're like, you're not a dick. Like, you're just so complicated.
Yeah, there's just so many facets to him that makes him so interesting. And the other side, I want to Moxley. I don't think Moxley's going to win his block, but this guy is just on another level. His promos with Shooter is just
awesome,
amazing, and what he does in a minute to minute and a half is just incredible. And the fact that WWE had this guy, and this existed in Moxley from all along, at any point they could have tapped into this and they didn't, is still one of the biggest blunders that the company, WWE, will have this year.
Well, this year, for more than that, but it just makes you wonder how many other guys, if they were unleashed from that cage, how great they could be. There's so many guys you're just like, I bet this guy would be incredible if he got away from them. Because it's just such proof of the WWE system failing. And when I say the WWE system, I mean both in the fact that you limit people's matches, you know, limit necessarily what they're allowed to do in their matches, and it's not a mentality of everybody have the best match. That's not the mentality that's put out there, which is a damn shame, because if that mentality had existed in you know, the Attitude Era, I don't know that they would have beat WCW. I don't know that Edge and Christian and the Dudleys and the Hardys would have stolen the show and become legends and had a legendary match. You know, well, I do know they wouldn't have. Like, but also the promos, like I say, and the personality and the scripted promos. It's just proof that the WWE system is a failure.
Yeah. John Moxley was able to take a young lion and elevate him to where everyone knows the kid's name. Everyone knows who he is. He gets to hold the title and follow Moxley around. It's just proof that Moxley, and like, Moxley's promos get others over. Like, I remember his promo about Shingo and talking about, there's no way this guy is a junior heavyweight because he hits like a tank.
Yeah.
It's just little things like that you got the win, but you're still putting the other guy over, and that helps elevate.
Which is what you should do.
Yeah.
You know, it's what you're supposed to do. You know, the thing about Moxley is it's you can see now they're talking about his elbow injury. And if I'm AEW, I'm like, get the hell back over here so that you're not injured. Come the launch of our television, come All Out. Like, I'd be like, get the hell back over here. But I mean, he said he's gonna be able to continue to stick around or do some stuff with New Japan, and having that title and that storyline that won't be finished after the G1 with Juice, it's gonna be very interesting to see how it goes with him for the next little while.
Yeah.
You know who I've really loved in this G1 and I've always been hard on him is actually Zack Sabre Jr. Despite not having I've never been a big fan, but despite not having a great record, I've liked what he's done with the personality, and his promos have always been, I've always kind of enjoyed his promos though. And he clearly doesn't really think about them. He just kind of lets it fly and wing Morris it. But
Johnson.
The style though, I mean, that he'll go in the back and lie down exhausted and keep talking and deliver a promo is so unique. I love that. And calling himself the, what was it? 80 kilogram vegan British hunk. I thought that was just hilarious, you know, and he's talking about the veganism and the animals dying. It's like, here's something that actually matters to him, yeah. You know? And then like he's turning around and saying, talking about this stuff and how terrible this is. And there's the slaughterhouses and you talk about that. And I'm like, it really matters to him. And he's like, I should be doing more to help this cause. And then he turns around and wrestling goes, and people say, as a vegan, how do you get your iron? How do you get your iron? You know, and it's like it's just, I've really enjoyed Zack Sabre Jr. in this tournament.
I have as well. I've been high on him. His promo about Boris Johnson, and that's the reason that he struggled, is because Boris Johnson.
British Prime Minister, new British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. That was hilarious.
And him just having a meltdown and throwing the chair around. It just.
Yeah, the petulant child reaction. Not afraid to go there,
and it just works, and it's one of those things where it's just like another guy's has gained notoriety and gained a little bit of shine, and it's just it like you look at what New Japan's able to do. They've sold out, I believe, the Philly and I think the Boston show is almost sold out, but they've sold out New York. They've sold out Philly, and Boston's not far off from selling out. And then you look at Ring of Honor in Vegas around that same time, and they barely sold any tickets. New Japan's doing just fine right now in the United States.
It's tough, because they had a little – when they put the belt on Jay White, it probably was a mistake. They had a little bit of a dip from it, but they've come back strong.
Yeah,
they've come back stronger than ever. They're going to continue to get bigger in the States. Meanwhile, you got – ROH, who a lot of their best house shows have been performing shows have been because they've been able to put New Japan talent on in the last 3-4 years. And now with New Japan running in the U.S. more and becoming less unique there for ROH, it hurts them. So it hurts them to have that. It's like it hurts them, and yet they have that very important partnership with them. But I'll say this. I mean, yes, okay, ROH is struggling, but people got to keep this in mind. We talk about it, Sinclair. So let's just say, for an example, it takes Sinclair an hour to purchase programming that they're going to put on television. Purchase, I don't know, The Simpsons or something like that. An hour costs them $100,000 to do so. And then they sell the advertising for $110,000. They make a slight profit, and then you do that over 24 hours and over 364 days and the 500 affiliates, and you can see why they're such an incredibly big company. But it's not a huge profit per. Now, if you look at it, if it costs them $100,000 to produce an hour-long episode of ROH, but then you factor in the fact that they're bringing in, ticket sales, even if it's $30,000 worth of ticket sales, another $10,000 worth of merch, and then, you know, other various things that it brings in money for, and maybe it costs them, by the time that's all said and done, $50,000 to fill that hour compared to the $100,000 to buy syndicated programming. That's why it's valuable, cheap programming. Yeah. It might cost as much to do, but because it brings in money to offset the cost of doing it, it's actually cheaper than it is to buy syndicated television. So even if it's not wildly successful, it's successful enough for them to fill programming at a cheap rate, and they put that show on a weekend like 3 or 4 times on a network to fill it. That's 3 or 4 times that they're not paying for syndication fees for the rights for programming, and so that's why ROH is valuable to Sinclair and isn't going anywhere. I hope that explains it to people who are, because I've heard a lot of people concerned about them, and it's like, no man, they can lose money, but they just have to not lose more money than costs to purchase programming, and that's almost impossible to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's where they are going to stay where they are, and that is going to be a rough patch for Ring of Honor, but I think eventually they will find footing again. They'll find some young talent that they'll be able to build up and then go from there. It'll take a little bit of time.
I didn't think they'd be as bad, honestly, as they did, because when they brought in Brody Lee and PCO and Bandido and Roosh, I thought, okay, you're going to have a little dip because you've lost some great talent in the Bucks and Cody, and you know Omega won't be around even though he wasn't around a ton. And I thought, oh, you brought in a great guy, so it'll just take a little while to connect. But none of that has really worked out. Jeff Cobb's another one who's like a really great wrestler, but he just doesn't have a ton of charisma. He's well suited to a Japan more so maybe than an ROH, and yeah, like, or maybe in Lucha Underground, when you put him under a mask, that's maybe the best way to do it and give him a manager, you know. But I didn't think they struggle as badly as they have, but you know, yeah, they'll be okay. Okay. Like, I just have to feel that they'll be okay eventually. They have good booking, they have good storylines still. They just got to find that guy. I think it has hurt the fact that Lifeblood was created and you put in, you know, Hot Sauce Tracy Williams and you know, Haskins and Bandido, and you create this group, you know, Emma's in there, and then Emma leaves, and but the main guy in the group, the guy who's the leader of the group, is Juice, and other than his appearance at MSG, which you could even argue wasn't an ROH appearance but a New Japan appearance, he hasn't been around, and I thought he was going to really be a good thing for them and in the United States, ready to really emerge. But the thing is, let's face it, he's living in Japan a lot more now, and that's his focus. That's where his passion is, and that's where his best storylines are, cause as we're seeing in this G1 and the evolution of his character.
And there was actually some reports that Juice didn't want to do Ring of Honor anymore. Basically, yeah. Told Japan, I don't want to go back there. Keep me around Japan. I don't want to do anything with Ring of Honor. So that's why he faded away. So it's interesting. The last guy for Block B I want to talk about before we end the G1 show is Jay White, the one that I think is probably going to win Block B, and probably lead to Mo Victory again for another year in a row. What have you thought of what he's done in this G1 and just where Jay has gone since losing the title?
Okay. This is very interesting because I was thinking this as I was watching Jay versus Juice, which was pretty good and had the crowd into it. But I'm like, man, what's that Jay White great match that we're talking about, the way we talk about Ishii and Ospreay and Okada and even Tanahashi, Kenta, Shoto and these different people, like where's that great Jay White, you know? Cobb had the great match with Ishii, and it's like, it's not there. And this guy's going to be, you know, in the main event slot at the end of the block, and it's like, it's not there. And you know, going forward, it's probably not going to be there. But then I started to realize that it's because his psychology is so brilliant, but it's not a psychology to get a match over. It's not psychology designed to have a 5-star match. It's psychology designed to get heel heat, and he's great at it. That's what he's going for. He's not trying to have a 5-star match. He's trying to get heel heat and be truly hated, and so that when somebody kicks his ass finally, that'll be the moment. And so it's just so different than everybody else's psychology in New Japan. Nobody else is doing that. And he's brilliant at it. But it means that the matches aren't as high quality. But it means that, yes, absolutely, as a persona, he might be the most over guy. And he's just gotten better and better and better at being that heel persona. Little things like just sitting with Rocky after the match and just, you know, condescending, talking to him with his arm around him. As you can tell, Rocky hates him. And again, it feels like real heat. It's not, but it's just so well done. So, yeah, that's what I think about Jay White. I think his brilliant psychology, but it's just that we're expecting a different type of psychology. We're expecting match psychology, 5-star match, but he delivers something completely unique. He delivers heel heat instead of quality matches, and that's okay. You can have a guy like that, or one or two.
You need to.
Would I put him in the main event? Would I put him in the main event slot? Not and not off, often, to be honest with you. But it's a valuable tool to have in your booking tool belt, so to speak. Yeah. If you're a guy like Gato.
Yeah, I and the more I think about it, the more I think he is going to beat Naito, and I don't think he's gonna win the G1. I think if it's Naito and if it's Ibushi and Jay White, that logically makes the most sense, because that's your pure babyface in Ibushi, and then your, like you said, your biggest heel in your company is Jay White. So when Ibushi beats him, then it's that much more important to Ibushi, and then that just helps elevate Ibushi moving forward. So 2 years in a row, Mo, how does that feel?
If I get it right, if I do it, and especially now that I've gotten a point back that you had taken away from me because you're a cheater, yeah, feels pretty damn good.
Honest to God.
Especially since, like I say, I've been turned around in this tournament so many damn times.
I will say this, that once the G1's all done and everything dust is settled, I'm going to send the spreadsheet to you and Josh, and I'm going to have you guys go through both your guys' side of the blog.
Can't we just have him? I'm lazy. I'm a busy guy. If it means me winning, I will do it.
That's absolutely it, because there is so many matches, and going through and punching in all the information, I'm prone to little flubs when it comes to math. My career is not designated to math, so.
Yeah, I'm probably more, my job is much more math-based than yours, I'm sure. So, we can absolutely do that. It's funny, because actually somebody I work with, I told him I was doing this. He's like, I want to do that, because he's a big wrestling fan. So we were doing it, and about halfway through it here, all of a sudden he took off to Toronto to go to SummerSlam, and he hasn't continued it. But I feel for you. I created a way to do it that I thought was pretty simple, because I started late, but maybe you've got a complicated system and that's your problem. It's very easy to make. It's very easy to make the mistakes. I can say I was 2 points up on him when he took off.
Well, I'll have to find out what your system is, and then we'll compare, and maybe I can make my life easier next year, because this is definitely going to happen again next year.
Oh yeah. In fact, I want even more people in.
Oh, the more
listeners you want in, you let us know. We're available.
Oh yeah,
you can request.
All it takes is a tweet or an email. But I think that's it for our G1 podcast. We will have a NXT and SummerSlam show also available, because it's such a busy week in pro wrestling. So Mo, thank you for coming on. Josh, thank you for being quiet for the whole show. Josh, I feel bad. Josh got sick and he's lost his voice, and the doctors have said he can't talk until Wednesday. So Josh will not be on any of the shows this week, and even any post shows. So hopefully he gets better, but the peace and quiet is nice.
That guy, I'd like to say he's never sounded better, but the truth is he needs his voice. It's how he makes a living, so I feel bad for him.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing.
But, talking too much.
See, that's the thing. Sometimes you just got to be quiet and save that voice. Use it for the right moments. But hopefully, Josh, you get better, and then you can come back on. And who knows, maybe Moxley wins, and we'll have to listen to Josh talk for the whole year about being right.
If he wins, I hope he never lets it go.
Oh, he never would.
But even if he wins, you beat him in last year's fantasy football. Let's mention that. And I'm hoping you beat him again.
I got my fingers crossed. Draft's coming up soon. But Mo, thank you for coming on. We got two more shows coming this way, so stay tuned.
Two more? You just want to throw it in as one, since this one went so much longer than we had originally intended, and maybe do one real quick show?
Let's do one, because this one will probably be not... half of it will be positive, and the other half, not so much. So... We'll decide. You'll find out going on to the brand new We Talk podcast website, which is a very nice layout, and we'll have some shows for you.
Lots more coming on that layout, so I'm glad you like it though.
Woo.
Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And good night. Bye.